Well, what's up and good morning? How's it going? Guys, you guys look good today. I kind of said 8 o'clock didn't look so good today. They came in looking like they lost an hour of sleep. And no, you guys, this is a good looking crowd. I like it. You look ready? Let's have a good time. My name is Trevor. I'm the elementary pastor. And I'm super excited about today. I just think this is a series we're in. Questions Jesus asked. It's a tough one because what I'm learning is that when Jesus asks questions, he's never usually like, what's your favorite ice cream? It's usually challenging and he's usually kind of poking and prodding. And so, you know, whenever you prepare to preach a sermon, God's usually like, hey, I'm going to wake you up a little bit with what you're going to talk about. So I've had to learn some things. But let me start off with this. If you have not joined us for any other part of this series, like last week, Steve Allen preached a message that, first of all, was incredible. And so if you haven't listened to that, I want you to go back and do that. Steve's right here. Just kidding. You're not Steve. It was great. Now let me tell you why it was great and why you need to go back and listen to it. Because it is the prequel to today's sermon, unintentionally. Last week, Steve's sermon, his question that Jesus asked was, who do you say that I am? And today it's, why are you so afraid? And the answer to the question of who do you say I am has a huge impact on the answer to the question, why are you so afraid? So if you have not gone back and listened to his, if you haven't listened to this, go back and listen to it because it's totally worth your time. Now, as far as today goes, I named this sermon a couple weeks ago before I knew what today was. It's called The Theology of Naps. I did not know we were all going to lose an hour of sleep before I preach this. But we're going to talk about a nap that Jesus takes. But also, guys, I love naps. I just, yes, preach. Hallelujah. Here's what you need to know. I'm not like a during the day, like, oh, I need to take a nap. I'm like, I need to drink coffee. That's me. And then on Friday, Saturday, my day's off, my kids take naps. And I'm like, heck yes, I'm gonna go lay down. One time, true story, I was on a road trip by myself and I pulled into a Hardee's and I was like, I'm gonna go into Hardee's and get something to eat. And I went in, and Hardee's, by the way, is just Midwest Carl's Jr. So I'm from Iowa. And I went into Hardee's and I just decided I'm gonna take a nap. And taking a nap in a Hardee's is not like a crazy thing to do, but waking up in a Hardee's is crazy. You know the naps where you wake up, you're like, have I been asleep for 20 minutes or for 2 hours? Now you're in a Hardee's. And there's a guy in your bedroom getting Diet Coke from a soda fountain. And you just like, I don't really know how to do this. And the workers, they don't expect it. It's crazy. Another nap, a notable nap that I took. I'm proud of this one. I was at the hospital and the nurse came in. She said, hey, it's going to be a while. You're gonna kind of have to wait. And you can lay down on this couch though and just take a nap. And I don't know if you've ever laid down on a hospital couch, but it is equivalent to the benches that parks install to prevent homeless people from sleeping in them. So if you lay down on a hospital couch, you go, this thing is terrible. But my wife was about to give birth. And they said, hey, it's gonna be a while. You should try to get some rest. Which for me, I'm like, cool, I love it. And my wife was like, that sounds impossible. And I laid down and I managed to sleep through the birth quakes for a few hours while she is having contraction on contraction and I'm just taking a nap. Now, by the way, doctor's orders, don't think someone in the front row on Thursday was like, you are the worst. I don't know, what else am I supposed to do? I'm not gonna deliver that baby. My roommate in college, this is a true story, my roommate in college gave his bed a nickname. He called it The Word. He called his bed The Word. That way, if someone were to be like, hey man, we need to get together and work on that group project, he could go, yeah, I just haven't been in The Word enough lately. And so I'm gonna go spend some time in The Word. And then he would just go take a nap. And he would get away with it. And so you can steal that and you go like, I feel like that's not spiritual. But you know what? I'm not the one that did it, so don't judge me. Today we have a story about Jesus taking a nap and it's an all-timer. Like this is Nap Hall of Fame. Okay, it's from Mark chapter 4, verse 35 through 41. And I'll get out of your way and we'll read it from back here. It says, as evening came, Jesus said to his disciples, let's cross to the other side of the lake. So they took Jesus in the boat and started out, leaving the crowds behind, although other boats followed. But soon a fierce storm came up and high waves were breaking into the boat and it began to fill with water. Jesus was sleeping at the back of the boat with his head on a cushion. The disciples woke him up shouting, teacher, don't you care that we're going to drown? And when Jesus woke up, he rebuked the wind and said to the waves, silence, be still. And suddenly the wind stopped and there was a great calm. And then he asked them, why are you afraid? Do you still have no faith? The disciples were absolutely terrified. "Who is this man?" they asked each other. "Even the wind and waves obey him." There are some things I want to point out in this story. The first one is this. There is turmoil, okay? There is a real storm. It is not fabricated. They didn't imagine it. This isn't anxiety getting the best of them, making a mountain out of a molehill. This is a real storm. They witnessed it. There were other boats on the water that witnessed it. And number two, the disciples are overwhelmed. This is an important fact because at least the first four disciples that we know of, Peter, Andrew, James, and John, were called from being fishermen. If you're a fisherman, you get on a boat and you go out on the water, whether it's rain or shine or day or night, like your job is to catch fish. And so they go out there, they're used to being on the water and they're used to having rain and storm. So when a storm that would come up would cause them to go, "Teacher, don't you care that we're drowning?" That's a big storm. Okay, so we're not talking about like, "Oh no, it rained." It's like, this is a big deal. And Jesus is sleeping. This is important. He says his head's on a cushion. Can you imagine how soggy that pillow is? As though, like, this dude is out cold. This dude took an Ambien before he got on the boat. He is gone. And they go, "Don't you care, we're going to drown." And he wakes up and he says to the winds and the waves, "Silence, be still." Except the word used is the word rebuke. It says he rebukes the storm. And I need you to understand the biblical use of the term rebuke. Imagine for a second that you're driving in your car and you have your two kids in the backseat. And they start to argue. And you go, "Hey guys, I need you to chill out. I need you to knock it off." And they continue to fight. And one of them actually throws something at the other kid. And you say to them, "Hey guys, could you just like silence and be still?" Nope. What you say is, "Hey, knock that crap off." Jesus wakes up with an air of, "Hey, wind and waves, knock it off." He's not super stoked about getting woken up from this nap. And then he turns to his disciples and he calms the wind and the waves and he turns to them and he says, "Thanks for waking me up. Thanks for believing in me." Nope. He wakes them up and he says, "Hey, wind, waves, knock that off. What's your deal? Why are you so afraid? Where is your faith?" This is his question to them. Why are you afraid? Do you still have no faith? This is the Jesus equivalent of like, "Look guys, I'm not mad, I'm just disappointed," which is somehow worse. And the disciples look at each other and they go, "Who is this man that even the wind and the waves, even nature obeys him?" They've been following him, right? Like they watched him catch a miraculous catch of fish and said, "We will leave our nets and follow you." They've watched him perform miracles. They've heard him teach and tell parables and quote scripture. Like they know that this guy is for real. And they go, "Even this, he can do even this." They're learning more and more and more about him. And we have the benefit of having all of those stories. We know everything that they learned along the way. They had to learn it the hard way. We get a book called the Bible. So my question today is, why are you afraid? Not what are you afraid of, because I think we could go around this room and I could just say, "Hey, tell me one thing that you're afraid of." And we would all list something, you know, generally in the same vein. And your unique fear, the what are you afraid of, is special to you. But why are you afraid? Like, I know I made a list. I won't make you do this. I made a list of like everything that I'm afraid of and I tried to categorize it. And I basically dialed it down into two categories. Everything I'm afraid of. Okay, but why am I afraid of that? Two categories. The first one is this: self-preservation and vulnerability. Ego. Why are you afraid? Ego. Let me give you an example. A few years ago, 11 years ago almost, I got hired to do this job. I was 22 years old. I had been out of college for a literal 4 days. I moved across the country from Iowa, I got here, and I didn't know what I was doing. The people who hired me were not smart people, okay? But what they said was, we just saw the potential in you, and so we wanted to really embrace that, knowing you don't really know what you're doing. But I spent some time going, "Hey, I'm doing a job, and I don't want anybody to know that I don't know what I'm doing." And everything became decisions, not based on what I think I should do, but like, what would make people think I know what I'm doing? Okay, you don't have to raise your hand, but like, anyone? Then the guy that hired me, his name was Nathan Rector, he was our lead pastor at the time, he left and we brought in this new guy named Dan Shields. And I spent the next 5 years just going, look, Dan doesn't even know me. And all I need is for Dan to not know that I don't know what I'm doing. The second he finds out I don't know what I'm doing, I'm getting fired and I got to keep this job. And I need to say something really quickly. Dan never once was like, hey, I'm about to fire you, so don't mess up. He's been nothing but encouraging. But like, that was me. I said, hey, I'm not afraid to fail, but I'm so afraid of being a failure, right? I'll take a risk and I'll try something. And if it doesn't work, okay, maybe we won't take the risk next time. Because if you fail once, it's like, man, you're a risk taker. You fail twice, it's like, you're not good at this. And you fail three times, it's like, this is what you do. I'm afraid of this. Self-preservation, vulnerability, ego. When Adam and Eve sinned for the first time, they ate the fruit and it says their eyes were open and they realized that they were naked and they were ashamed and they hid because they were afraid. Vulnerability, self-preservation, ego. The other thing that I'm afraid of, or that why I'm afraid, is safety. Why are you afraid of that? It's not safe. It's dangerous. And there are a lot of categories to safety, but like let me give you kind of a flippant example. When I was 18 years old, I said, I need to conquer a fear. I need to face the fear that I have. I'm afraid of heights. When I was in third grade, I fell off a ladder, hurt very badly. Even today, at 33 years old, I don't care for ladders. I decide I'm going to conquer this fear. I go skydiving. we're just gonna jump to the top of the list. I'm afraid to be six steps up on a ladder. Let's jump out of an airplane. I go and I take the training course, which, by the way, is done on a VHS tape, which seems outdated. I spent a good amount of money because skydiving is not the thing where you want to cut corners. There are two things, skydiving and LASIK eye surgery. Pay the full price. Don't go to Groupon. Just take the hit. I go up in the airplane, and then a stranger who said, you can call me Sparky, straps himself to my back. And he's like, are you ready? I said, no. They open the door where you realize now I'm 13,000 feet above the ground. We're gonna jump out of this thing. And I said, I am scared. I don't know that I can do this. And he said, just look up and arch your back like a banana. And so I said, and then he grabs the sides of the plane and goes, whew, and out we go. And it's 60 seconds of free fall followed by another 6 or 7 minutes of parachuting to the ground. And it was amazing. I had such a great time. And I will never do it again, okay? But let me tell you why. That day I was like, oh, that was so great. I can't wait to do that again. But now, first of all, I was 18 and now I'm in my 30s and I am on my own insurance. So if something goes wrong, I have to pay, although I do suppose that if you have a skydiving accident, insurance is probably like, yeah, we can't do anything for you. The other thing is this, I have a wife and kids now, and there are higher stakes for me to be safe and around. So I'm gonna make a decision based on, hey, what's the right thing for me and my life and my family? I'm gonna let safety dictate that. A large scale example of where safety ranks in our culture. Safety is one of the most important things in our culture. I don't know if you will remember. I'm gonna make a statement. It is a political comment, not a political statement. I have no opinions. I'm not educated. I'm not a smart man. Okay, let me step back into this. Safety is so important that we watched our country argue for years over we should give up freedoms to be safe. And we fought about it for years and also presently. Safety is so important. You can't go to this place unless you have said, I did the safe thing for someone else. And we let safety dictate everything as a country. Now, I know some of you are like, yes, we did. And some of you are like, how dare we? It's not what I'm saying. Just want you to feel that for a second, that safety is the most important thing. Because when the disciples say to Jesus, teacher, do you not care we're going to drown? He says, why are you afraid? They go, because the waves are huge. Our safety and our lives are at stake. Now, Erwin McManus, he's a pastor of a church in California. He said it this way in his book. He said, what you fear establishes the boundaries of your freedom. The more that you are afraid of, the less freedom that you will have in your life. So let me give you an example. this is your life and this is what you trust God with, everything in between here. So like, I control this and everything outside of this is outside of the boat and its winds and its waves. And you come to VRL and we say things to you like, hey, do you know where you actually go deeper, where you talk about the sermon, what's going on in life groups? And then you say, hey, if I go to a life group though, they're gonna ask me to like, I don't know, talk about my feelings. They're gonna ask me to share. And that's scary and I don't wanna do that. Okay. I don't want you to process with me for a second. I don't wanna go to a life group because I feel like God has people in my life that he wants to speak truth into my life and to encourage me. And I don't wanna do that. And God's like, you could have, but look at the relationships and the friendships that you could have. Look what it would do for your life personally. Look what it would do for your marriage and for your family. You could have more. But you see the wind and the waves and you say, I don't know, that seems scary out there. Well, Jesus is just sleeping on the boat. Like he is so at peace. He is napping through the storm. When the peace of God is missing from your life, it feels like a piece of you is missing. And so you are staying here on this boat, going, I can't look anywhere outside of this because the winds and the waves are too scary. I can't give that to God because look how terrifying it is. And sometimes we get mad at God. Tell me, you know, shout it out, but just like think through this. Do you know somebody who used to go to church and they don't anymore because they said, when I needed God, he wasn't there. I said, I prayed and I cried out to God and I said, God, this is what's happening in my life right now and he didn't show up. The God that we follow sleeps through storms. Did you realize he might have just been so in control over the situation in your life that he said, hey, I'm gonna handle it, but I'm gonna show up when I'm ready. Like, it's like one of my biggest frustrations with God is that he is never late, but like he is seldom on time. Even with his buddy Lazarus, he shows up. His friend Lazarus has died 4 days earlier and Lazarus' sister cries and says to him, if you had only been here, my brother wouldn't have died. And Jesus weeps. It's the shortest verse in the Bible that still makes sense. John 11:35 says, Jesus wept. That's the whole verse. He mourned and grieved for his friend. And the next thing that he did was he said, Lazarus, come out. And he raised him from the dead. And so we get mad at God sometimes. We go, God, like I cried out to you and you didn't show up. He didn't show up when you wanted him to show up. But he knows what he's doing. Now there's another nap story in the Bible from Matthew 26:36-46. That's easy to remember. And it reads like this. Then Jesus went with his disciples to a place called Gethsemane, and he said to them, sit here while I go over there and pray. And he took Peter and the two sons of Zebedee along with him, and he began to be sorrowful and troubled. And then he said to them, my soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. Stay here and keep watch with me. And going a little farther, he fell with his face to the ground and he prayed, my Father, if it is possible, may this cup be taken from me, not as I will, but as you will. Then he returned to his disciples and found them sleeping. Couldn't you men keep watch with me for 1 hour? He asked Peter. Watch and pray so that you will not fall into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. And he went away a second time and prayed, my Father, if it is not possible for this cup to be taken away unless I drink it, may your will be done. And when he came back, he again found them sleeping because their eyes were heavy. So he left them and went away once more and prayed the third time, saying the same thing. And then he returned to the disciples and said to them, are you still sleeping and resting? Look, the hour has come and the Son of Man is delivered into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us go. Here comes my betrayer. Let's just point out the points of this story. They look a lot like the earlier one. Number one, there is turmoil. Jesus is praying in the garden. And he says, God, this cup, I ask that it be taken from me. And he's overwhelmed. There's turmoil and he's overwhelmed. Oh, let me say this. What's gonna happen over the next 9 hours of Jesus' life is this. He's gonna get arrested. He's gonna go on trial, be found guilty. He's gonna be beat. He's gonna be put on a cross and murdered. And he goes, hate that. God, if you could take this cup from me. Oh, and by the way, you will not find many biblical scholars who think that what he's saying is, God, don't let me be crucified. It's that when Jesus is crucified, he's gonna take the sins of the world, he's gonna take the sins of you, the sins of me, And that sin is what separates us from God. And by the way, Jesus is God. And so he's saying, hey, my identity is going to be ripped in half when I take the sin and I die, because that is what keeps people from God. And that will, for the first time in Jesus's life, which by the way, is eternal, he will be separated from God. And he says, if you could take that cup from me, that would be great. But if this is the only way, then I'll do it. This is in another passage telling the same part of the story. It says that Jesus is sweating drops of blood. Like Jesus is having an anxiety attack over what's about to happen. The storm, the emotional and mental and spiritual storm is real, and Jesus is overwhelmed and his disciples are sleeping. And he goes to them, and again, he wakes them up, and he does it, you know, hey guys, how you feeling? Did you get good sleep? You feeling well rested? Oh, I'm so glad. Actually, I went away, I was praying. I was sweating drops of blood. I was praying that you guys would get good sleep. Nope, not what the man says. He comes back and he asks him, he says, couldn't you keep watch for an hour? I asked you for one thing, pray for me for an hour, and you fell asleep. I'm gonna go here and do it again. He goes off and he prays the same thing. God, if you can take this cup from me. And he comes back, and guess what they're doing? They're sleeping. Why? Their eyes were heavy. Aw. Your eyes were heavy. This one, it doesn't even say he woke him up. It's just he just leaves again. He's just like, whatever. And he goes back, and he prays the same thing one more time. God, if you can take this cup from me, do it, because I don't want to do this, but not my will, but yours be done. And he comes back to them, and he says, are you still sleeping and resting? Look, the hour has come and the Son of Man is delivered into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us go. Here comes my betrayer. I want to ask you a question. Think about your life. Has there been a time where you got mad or frustrated or annoyed with God because you felt like I prayed to God and he did not answer. He didn't care. He may as well have been sleeping. And now I want to ask you the question, is there a time where God has been speaking to you and has put something on your heart and you said, I know I should do that, but you responded in a way that was basically sleeping? And would God have a moment where he would say, hey, I know you're mad at me for not doing what I asked you to do, but like, I need you to look at what's going on in your life. Why are you afraid? Are you afraid because of the winds and the waves, or are you afraid because of the things that I've asked you to do? Because of the mission that I've called to be a part of. I'm gonna tell you a story about someone. It is a guy named Bill Hauser. He goes by Brother Bill. He's the lead pastor of the church that I grew up in. And so I went to his funeral on Zoom last week. He lives in Indiana now, or lived. And so I got to go to the funeral. It's weird to say I got to go to his funeral, but they provided an online option. And he was the lead pastor for 40 years of my home church. And so I was born and like immediately taken to that church. He's the only lead pastor I knew for 18 years till I went off to college. He was there before me. He was there after me. My mom worked at the church for a season of my life. And so this was her boss. And just this man's just incredible. A way I would describe him would just say he was so on fire for the Lord that you would just show up just to watch him burn. And he was just so excited, and he was the epitome of servant leadership. And he, like I said, served this church for 40 years, and then he moves to Indianapolis to be closer to his family, closer to his kids and grandkids. And through retirement, he just starts volunteering at the local hospital that has a cancer center. And he volunteers to work in the valet, because he said, every person that I talk to at the valet is someone who is in the middle of a storm. And I get to greet every single person and say, hey, it's so great to see you today. I know the circumstances aren't ideal, but like, can I pray for you before you go in? Or when they came out, he said, let me go get your car, but first, can I pray for you? And he did this for years. And I didn't do this at 8:00. Come on now. He ended up having an unexpected need for a heart surgery. And he went in, and he was in his, you know, late 70s, and there's always a risk. Late 70s, open heart surgery, but no one expected him to pass away, and he did. kind of unexpectedly, but while he was recovering, he got pneumonia. And so he was in the hospital, and people were coming up to his room that worked at the hospital or other people that were there for their own treatments, and they would come and visit him, and they would say to his kids, like, you have no idea the impact that your dad had on me. Because he would see me at the worst possible times and just talk to me about Jesus and pray for me and love me in a really, really hard moment. And he and his wife had a conversation, and the conversation basically went like this. Her name was Connie, and she said, like, Bill, I just wish that Jesus would come back. I just wish he would come back right now, because if Jesus comes back, he wins, and everything bad is gone, and we get to go be with him. Has anyone ever prayed that or had that thought? Like, if Jesus could just come back right now, that would be incredible. And he said, Connie, you don't want that. We don't want that. She goes, what do you mean? He goes, because if Jesus comes back right now, there are so many people that we haven't got to tell about him yet. And when Jesus comes back, yeah, I get to go be with him, and you get to go be with him. But there are so many people that we haven't got to tell about him yet. And that is that's a perspective shift. The why are you afraid? Well, I'm afraid because of your health. And he goes, no, we're afraid because of the mission that Jesus has put us on, that there are other people that need him. So I'm gonna show you this. I made this, and it's incredible, and you guys are gonna be blown away at how artistic I am. I made this little teeny tiny turtle. I know, I'm so good. This is gonna be my life, or your life. And we got a picture of it, so you can see a little bit better up there. And I worked hard for this, because this is me. And everything that I've accomplished in life is put into this. And you would see that, and you would go, that, Trevor, is an adorable teeny tiny turtle. And it is obvious that you worked really, really hard on that teeny tiny turtle. And God says, I would love it if you would share that with me, because I want to do something really, really cool. And I go, okay, but God, like, Jesus, what do you want to do with this turtle? And he goes, it's a surprise. I said, I don't like that. He goes, scripturally, I will make you into new creation. If anyone isn't in Christ, he's a new creation. The old is gone, the new has come. Come follow me, and I will make you into a fisher of men. I will change you into something greater. I go, but look at this turtle. Look how cute he is. We named him Sheldon on Thursday night, because he has a shell. So, so cute. And Jesus goes, no, give it to me. So what you're gonna do, what I'm gonna do, we're gonna give our turtle, we're gonna put it in here. And Jesus is gonna break it. He's gonna break it. He said, the turtle's great, but like, the turtle is you, and I need you to be a reflection of me. And what happens if you take a stained glass window, or you take a sun catcher, and you break it up, and you just pick up the pieces, the purple and the orange and the green there, whatever color that you would paint your turtle, and you pick up those broken pieces and you put them with a couple of mirrors into a kaleidoscope. If you hold that up to the light and you just look into this and you start to spin it, it starts to look something like this. And look, I get that turtle is really, really awesome. But you could just watch this for hours. Like, I could just be like, hey, can we just throw some Pink Floyd on? And I'd walk off. And you guys would just be like, best Sunday ever. You'd just be chilling. It's mesmerizing. It would draw you in. I could be like, hey, how long do you think I've been watching this video? You'd be like, 3 hours? And I'm like, 7 minutes. Or you could be like, 30 seconds. I'm like, 4 days. It doesn't matter. You're drawn into what's happening back there. And that's what Jesus is saying. He goes, hey, I want to turn you into something that draws other people in. That when you follow me, you guys don't want to see that turtle anymore. You're like, get rid of the turtle, give me more of the kaleidoscope. And that's what we want. We want that when you reach the end of your life, people would come to your family, they would come to your funeral and say, he shared Jesus with me. He loved me in a moment that I needed to be loved. He was there for me in a moment that I needed someone to be there for me. not, he seemed like a good guy, but he didn't say things because he thought it might be awkward. What is that thing that God's calling you to do? It's different for every person, so I'm not going to give you any tips. He's calling you to do something. He said, hey, I have made you for a purpose, and you aren't going outside of this because you're afraid of everything out here. But like, dude, if you would just trust me, I can do so much with you. So if you are in a life group, I'm going to give you two questions that I want you to talk about this week. The first one is this: where are you choosing to be overwhelmed while Jesus is sleeping? Where are the things that if he was physically with you on the boat, you would go, I am overwhelmed with the size of the wind and waves, and he is sleeping. And how do you trust God with that? And the other question is this: where are you choosing to sleep while Jesus is overwhelmed? What's going on in your life? What has God put in front of you where he says, this is clearly what needs to be done and what I'm asking you to do? And you keep going, but my eyes are heavy, but I'm tired. Because he's going, no, I have so much in store for you, and you keep giving me this, and I would love it if you would give me this, and I would love it if you give me this, and I would love it if you would give me this. So I'm gonna pray a really, really simple prayer. God, give us eyes to see the world that you see, the way you see the world. And God, give us a heart to feel the things that you feel. Help us not be afraid. Amen. So here's where we're at. Some of you, this is where you're at on this boat. You go, I trust Jesus with nothing. I trust him with absolutely nothing. And I'm not saying today, hey, you don't need to do all of it. Hey, just commit to this. Hey, I don't know what it looks like, but I'm gonna ask Jesus what he wants me to do. I'm gonna trust him with this much. And I know that we have some people that today are gonna get baptized at the end of this service. And if you're one of those people, feel free to just head over right this way. Scott's over here by the cross. We can love to start getting you changed, get you ready to go. You can do that. I know for other people, you know, what God's calling you to do is just like take that next step relationally to go, hey, there are people that I need to let speak into my life because I know that what I'm doing is not what I should be doing. And there are people that I could be speaking into their life and I'm choosing not to. He says, just trust me. Just trust me with it. It'll be okay. You're like, but Trevor, then I have to join a small group and that's on a Monday night and that's when football is. God hates football, by the way. I work at a church. We have Thursday night services, Sunday morning services, and a small group on Monday night. I never get to watch football. It's a real point of contention with me and the Lord. But maybe that's what he's calling you to. Or maybe he's calling you something at work where he says, hey, can you trust me with your business, with your job? And you're like, yeah, but I've worked so hard to get where I am. He's like, yeah, and you hate it. I talk to so many people who honestly, they go, I've been doing this job for 30 years. I'm like, you love it? And they're like, it's a paycheck. That's a terrible answer. God is asking you, hey, what if you loved your job? Because what if your job was something you did it and you said, I know in my bones this is what God's calling me to do. I'll say this, I'm gonna speak on behalf of Steve for a second. We're gonna take a mission trip to Uganda this summer. And maybe God's calling you to like get out of your comfort zone and go and minister to widows and orphans and other pastors in another part of the world. And you feel like that's asking, I gotta do a lot of stuff there. I'm gonna tell you this, worst case scenario, guys, we've taken a lot of mission trips. And to my knowledge, only two people have ever gotten sick and parasites on these mission trips. It's me both times. God does not want me to go back to Africa. But maybe that's where God's calling you is to go and to minister to people around the world. Or maybe it's to get more involved in your kids' school because you can impact the teachers that are spending all of that time and energy investing into your kids and your neighborhood. I don't know what it is. God wants you to do something. God wants more for you because I promise you, you have a finite mind. I have a finite mind. I can only think this must be what God wants for me. He's going, you can't even see what I want for you. But we can't let that fear hold us back. Because he has so much, he is so big, and he wants all of it for us to glorify him. Stand up and sing with me.